Welcome to the Couple Money Podcast. If you're looking to become financially free together, this is your show. Here's your host, Elle Martinez.
What do the two of you want to do? Not just for the year, but beyond. Do you want to buy a house or start a family? Do you want to own your own business? Maybe you want to travel more. Most people I talk to have several dreams, goals, plans, whatever you want to call them. And once you get started, it is so hard to stop. But you know what's really difficult? Getting started. There are a ton of different reasons, but a reality most of us have to deal with is we just don't have the money to do it all. If that sounds like you, I think today's show will be a huge help. We're discussing how to effectively define our goals so we can achieve them, how to figure out where to keep our money for them, and how to tackle goals when the two of you don't agree. Helping us out is Stuart Ritter. He's a financial planner and vice president of T. Rowe Price's investment service. He's not only the numbers guy you'd want in your corner, he's also a teacher and kind of a coach. He's the person that explains the why before the process. And so when we chatted, that's where he began.
I think one of the big things that people just skip right over is defining what their financial goals are. I mean, let's recognize that we're all going to have more things that we want to buy than we have money to buy them with. So we need to prioritize. And folks often struggle between retirement and college and a house and a vacation and even just the everyday lifestyle. The first is to understand what the definition of a financial goal is. And there are three components to that definition. What do you want to buy? The second thing, though, is when do you want to buy it? Because that's going to have an influence on what you do with the money you save, whether you're buying it in the next 6 months, or maybe it's a down payment for a house in 7 years, or college for the kids in 15 years. And then the third component of that definition is what is it going to cost when you want to buy it. That's how you know you have a concrete definition of a financial goal rather than just some vague idea of what it is you might want to buy.
Now for the fun part, trying this out yourself. If you're listening at home, go ahead, pull out a scrap of paper and grab a pen or a pencil. Got them? Great. Now write down the essentials.
So what do you want to buy? When do you want to buy it, and how much will it cost?
I have to make a confession about my brief experimentation with podcast interactivity. I can't read what you wrote. So if you did do this activity, tell me in the show notes. I'd love to hear it. In the meantime, though, we're going to pretend that you and your spouse want to buy a house. You want to buy a house for about $220,000, and you're looking at a time frame of 7 years. Now it's time for the next step. Deciding where to stash the cash.
There are three decisions you'll make to achieve any of these financial goals that you've now defined. And the three decisions you need to make are, how much am I going to save? And as you pointed out, a lot of people figured that out. What account will I use? And that's for things like retirement, you would use a 401k or an IRA. Or for college, you would use potentially a 529 plan. And then the third step is, how do I invest that money? So let's say a couple have sat down and said, you know, retirement is at the top of our list, and as a financial planner, I certainly encourage that. Mm-hmm. And we figured out how much we want to save. We're going to put 15% of our household income away. And using 401k plans, there are investment choices in those plans to help with that. A lot of people struggle with the other ones, though, either college or things like a down payment on a house. And the biggest drivers of how much you, or rather how you would invest are, and I've got another set of three here.
This is my third
set of three. All right. First of all, your time horizon, when you want to buy it, drives the mix between stocks, bonds, and short-term investments. And then the second thing is, however much you have in stocks, you want to make sure you're diversified, so large company stocks, small company stocks, international stocks, and diversify with the bonds as well. And then you need to decide how you're going to implement it. So the first driver of how you invest the money is what your time horizon is, how long it's going to be before you use that money. And that drives the balance between stocks, bonds, and short-term investments.
I'm not sure about you, but if I'm saving up for a house, I'd hate to lose any of our hard-earned money. My instinct is telling me to stuff it in savings. But since this is a podcast about making smarter choices with money, I decided to ask Stuart to share his thoughts.
Right. Well, what you've just said in that last sentence is the tension that we have. I don't want to lose money, but the price of the thing I want to buy is likely going to go up over time. And the thing that gets me the most potential growth, stocks, also has the highest potential for short-term losses. So where's that balance? You know, other things come in like personal circumstances and risk tolerance, but it is that time horizon that helps you figure out what that balance is. Stocks give you the highest potential growth, but the highest potential short-term potential loss. So you look at your time horizon. Let's say it's 7 years before you want to buy that house.
Okay.
Well, in 7 years, prices will probably only go up a small amount because of inflation. So you do need some growth, but you don't want a lot of it because, let's say you put all your money in the stock market. Well, over a seven-year period, historically, there have been quite a few where you've had a negative return. So we would give people some guidance. A model portfolio for a situation like that might be 60% in stocks, 30% in bonds, and 10% in cash. So you've got part of the portfolio that's positioned for that potential growth, but other parts of the portfolio that are more stable, so that what might happen over those 7 years from a portfolio perspective isn't, you know, the potential loss you might have with all of the money in stocks. And then as your time horizon shortens, so as it becomes 6 years until you're buying the house, or five or four and so forth, you'd move the money from stocks into bonds until ultimately, if you're only 2 years from using the money, you wouldn't have any money in the stock market. You wouldn't have necessarily any money in the bond market. It would all be in short-term investments because with a short time period, you don't need potential growth because prices won't go up that much, but you do need that stability. And that's how you would change over time and use the time horizon to help you decide what that mix should be.
And these principles can be used for all your goals. But what if you're just starting out? How do you two decide which goals should be priorities when your budget is limited? Stuart has two suggestions for you.
If you're just starting out, and even if you've been doing this a while but don't have what I'm about to say in place, this is where we'd recommend folks focus. Start saving for retirement, because the longer you are saving, i.e. the sooner you start, the more you have the opportunity to take advantage of compound growth. And certainly if your employer is offering a match in the 401k, you're going to want to get that. You know, ultimately, target 15% of your salary. That's the number I want people to have in their head about saving for retirement. So that should be on the list. The other one is making sure you start building an emergency fund, because before we can pursue all these goals, we need a safety net in place, because life happens. And if you don't have the emergency fund, well, then when something happens, people will often turn to credit cards or something else, and whatever hole they might have gotten into because life happened now gets deeper because they weren't prepared financially for that. So start off with retirement and the emergency fund, and you can do both at the same time. Certainly, we're not going to just pursue one thing before we also incorporated everything else. Life's just too complicated. And then think about the other things you want to do. If you have debt that you want to pay off, you certainly want to pay off that debt as you're required to. And then to the extent that once you've got yourself on track for retirement and the emergency fund, you can devote more money to the debt. You can retire that sooner, or you start saving for the house. You may not know when, you may not know how much, but it's not going to be zero. So dedicating dollars towards that will start moving you on that path. And that's where you start having the conversations, if you're in a couple, with the other person about what your priorities are. Don't assume that the priorities you have in your head are necessarily going to be the same priorities in the other person's head. You want to make sure you're having that conversation.
Stuart has seen this many times with couples, including a recent education event for new parents.
Last week, I was volunteering at our local hospital for prospective parents. I do a class as part of the childbirth series for folks who are thinking about starting a family and want to better understand the financial aspects to it. And this whole couples dynamic is a big part of that.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have everybody go through an exercise where I say, okay, when it comes to transportation, what's your vision about what that will be? Are you going to go out and buy a new minivan? Are you going to continue driving the same car? What's your vision for where you want to live? Are you going to stay where you are? Will it be a townhouse? Will it be a single-family home? And I have the two members of the couple each go through this prioritization process separately. And then I have them start comparing notes. And it is always a fascinating part of that session, because it is the first time a lot of them have realized, wait a minute, what do you mean we're not on the same page? I'm thinking we're going to save enough to pay for our children's entire college education, and you think we're not saving anything. Well, I put myself through college. It was a great experience. I want to spend the money on the bigger house. And that will initiate a number of the conversations that are better taking place before the kids show up than afterwards.
If you have an opportunity to take a class like that, please go for it. But even if it's not available in your area, there are some things that you two need to keep in mind when you're not on the same page with goals. Stuart points out that there's a really big problem when some couples try to take on too much in an effort to avoid fights.
What I found is unfortunately one of the ways that couples will manage some of the tension that comes in with these priorities when they're different. Classic example, one of them wants to buy a bigger car and the other one wants to remodel the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And to, quote, avoid the conflict, instead of sitting down and deciding, well, which is more important, because we only have enough money to do one, they avoid that conversation and do both. You can do because of the magic of credit, right? That's magic. It just creates money where none existed before. And now each of us can have the thing we want, and we've, quote, avoided the tension and conflict between us. Well, as we've all experienced, as you know, all that does is it delays it and it makes it bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've got a big debt payment that is starting to influence the other things that we want to have. And if the conversation happens on the front end, if you're thinking through the priorities, if you're recognizing that the other person has different priorities and legitimate reasons for having those different priorities, that helps you both come together and decide as a couple what it is that is important to you and how the way you manage your money can reflect that when you're making those decisions.
Special thanks to Stuart for being a part of the show. He was a wonderful guest. And if you want to find out more about him, I have links to some relevant articles on finances in the show notes. And thank you for listening. On the next few episodes of the Couple Money Podcast, we're digging deeper into those goals you guys might have and the conversations around them. I have interviews about starting a business, teaching your kids about money. I'm not just talking about finances, but about the values you want to pass on and investing in a way that reflects what matters most to you. If you haven't already, go ahead and subscribe to the podcast. You can get the latest episodes as soon as they're released. It's easy and free. We're on iTunes, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher. The feed is also available on couplemoneypodcast.com, so you can grab it on whatever service you prefer. You can also leave your money questions there or chat with me on Twitter or Facebook at Couple Money. I'd love to hear what you think. Until next time, take care.